episode. Are you okay over there, buddy?
Yeah.
Sixth episode of Radio Radar. My name is Tom Agrino. It is September 18th. Cooper is not here. Lucas is out. Henry is out. Sophia Tong is in.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me now that you have absolutely nobody else to invite.
Literally zero people in this office other than the ones that are in this podcast.
Those pretty bums. Much. They're all on vacation.
Lorenzo.
Hanging out.
Lorenzo, yeah. Gloria, how are you doing?
I am here.
To the show.
I am back.
Ready to talk some games,
back
et cetera.
In a black t-shirt.
You are back in black. You wear black a lot.
Sometimes.
It's your color.
I don't know.
You wear
it
well.
It's menacing.
Yeah.
Makes him look slimmer.
Sterling McGarvey.
Yeah. I'm Sterling McGarvey, and I hate my coworkers because they're eating better Japanese food than me right now.
I'm a little jealous.
You're also looking a little worse for where I got to turn my... Cooper is now IMing me at this very moment. Let me turn my sound off. You're looking a little worse for wear after that Borderlands 2 marathon.
Oh, man, marathon.
Yep. 45 hours of total gameplay over a four-day period.
Yeah, we will definitely get to that. We have several things in store for today's episode, not the least of which is talk about Wii U. We have giveaways at the end of the show for our delightful community members. But before we get to any of that, top seven.
Top seven.
Top seven time, as with all Radio Radars. All seven.
All seven.
Six. No, we've done
six.
Five. We have done five.
Five.
God, I can't wait until we can do the top seven.
Top Radio Radars after you hit seven.
After we hit seven.
Oh, it's going to be hard to...
Anyway, this week we had on the docket top seven Japanese games that absolutely need to be localized for the West.
Keeping in theme with the whole TGS week, that's kind of why people are gone, and we're here talking about Japanese games.
Sterling alluded to earlier, most of our coworkers are in Japan for the Tokyo Game Show, at least Lucas and...
By most, we mean like three.
Yeah.
By most, we literally mean most, in that two are
true.
Over there. But Lucas and Henry are both in Japan to cover the show. Resident Japanese game experts, I will go on a limb and say. Because I'm for one, haven't really played that many Japanese games that are...
Yeah.
Certainly haven't been localized.
Yeah, neither have I, because it's hard to get...
I don't think most of us have, yeah.
It's hard to get your hands on them, because they're not localized.
I feel it's more like I read about stuff, and then I get really bitter when it comes out.
Yeah, they never come here.
And then I'm like, all right, so are they going to finally announce this? Crickets.
Nope.
Edgeworth 2 is one of those, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Because, let's face it, who doesn't love Miles Edgeworth?
Miles Edgeworth.
His frilly cravat, his purple suit.
The Phoenix Wright antagonist?
Yeah, he's the prosecutor.
Okay.
So he's got that sour face, the hair, the velvety purple suit.
That's
he's actually
right.
one of my favorite characters,
absolutely.
Which is why I was happy when they spun him off to his own.
And prosecutor is not the only word that starts with a P that I would use to describe Miles Edgeworth. Pimpin'.
Oh,
he's pimpin'.
Well, look at him. He's wearing a purple suit with
That's
a frilly cravat, for God's sake.
He is quite sexy. I find him a lot more attractive than Phoenix Wright.
Also, he does a fantastic job with banging the stand when he wants to make a point.
What is the draw for Miles Edgeworth, too?
Ace Attorney Investigations, Miles Edgeworth, was a ton of fun. Took all the courtroom drama of Phoenix Wright and kind of turned it on its head into another different experience that was a lot of fun. Turned it into a bit of an adventure game of sorts for the DS. Fantastic experience, and for the life of me, I cannot figure out why Capcom has not localized it.
I'm guessing because the first one probably didn't sell as well. I don't know the figures for it, but
yeah.
I feel like the people who played the initial series, like the 3 to 4 games with Apollo, they might have preferred the storyline to that one better. I think Miles, from all that I've played, I didn't actually beat it, but it was a little lacking. I mean, it's cool that you're out of the courtroom. You're actually, like, wandering around for the first time, but I guess I'd miss a bit of that courtroom drama, even though the drama is taken with you and you're finger-pointing and accusing people, like, on the fly or in different locations, but I don't know. I liked it. I still enjoyed it, and I would have liked to see the second.
I still love the first case with the tennis douche.
Yeah.
That one's a good one.
Yeah, I wouldn't count it out entirely that game, because it seems like it's one of those Phoenix Wright games.
Well, they announced Ace Attorney 5 for the West.
Right.
So it's like, but what happened to the other one? So they're probably working on that one.
One that we probably will not get. Number 6, Secret of Mana 2.
Ever. I'm
so sad.
Second
Densetsu 3.
Second Densetsu 3.
However they say it.
Second Densetsu 3.
Yeah.
Second Densetsu 3.
Secret of Mana was my, like, one of my favorite games of all time.
Really?
That was one of the few games you could actually play three-player co-op.
It was perfect.
So you had to get a little...
The adapter thing with it, because it's like, it was perfect, because it was like me, my brother, and my sister that would play. My brother would play the boy, I would play the crazy sprite with the magic.
Oh.
Yeah. Sprite. And then my sister's like, I want to be the girl in the pink dress. So everyone got the characters that they wanted. And I just loved that game because it was like the one bonding moment I had with my siblings and we weren't fighting over anything. Mm-hmm. So I was really bummed that I don't think the second one will ever come out. And they came out with the World of Mana.
Yeah,
and those
are... I wouldn't say ever. Couple PS1 I feel games. Like they At there this is point, a possibility that they could release it through, like, PS1 Classics
no.
or... No?
No.
None at all?
Still in Japanese?
Yeah, it's,
they need people to localize it.
Hasn't even been translated.
Yeah, the list localized.
I got to play a fan translated. I played a fan translated
version. Oh, did you?
Version. Yeah, I had to search around on the interwebs for a run.
Was it any fun?
Yeah, it's cool.
Secret of Mana is one of those games that the original one, I played... And I didn't realize at the time that it was kind of a big deal. And so just looking back, I'm like, oh.
I played that.
Yeah.
It was all right.
I have it on the Wii.
I didn't beat it by any means. It was
pretty,
hard.
It's a pretty long game,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's
long.
It was demanding.
I love the
for,
little,
like
thingy, the drum. Not the drum thing. The thing you shake
and
then.
Tick, tick, tick,
and
the
yeah,
dragon
the
comes.
Dragon swoops in, picks you up, and you start flying. It's awesome.
And the old school style 3D where it's just nasty looking.
It was so good.
Captain Rainbow, so good.
Okay, Captain Rainbow, I out of this list, I was like, what is Captain Rainbow? And I looked it up. I get these images of, like, Pepsi Man, except it's, like, a dude in a rainbow suit.
Yeah, so I'm going to read the description. Nintendo was very selective about what games come to the U.S. A few games were slight. God, where does he actually get into the... Okay, here we go. Created by Skip, a dev team mostly known for Nintendo downloadables, Captain Rainbow is a humorously bizarre take on Nintendo nostalgia. Overlooked characters from titles as diverse as Advance Wars, Zelda, and Punch-Out all look to Captain Rainbow for help.
That sounds fun.
Which achieves fabulous results.
Yeah. So you know, the lost archives of Nintendo characters.
I'm just curious to see what Captain Rainbow can do for Zelda that Link cannot.
I know.
Provide fabulosity?
I know. Provide some, like, wardrobe
this game sounds fabulous.
Yeah. It's,
Nintendo needs to get on that.
It definitely
they really
has
do.
A bit of a homoerotic undertone. Just
what do you
because
mean? I don't
his
understand.
His collar is a giant rainbow.
That's fine. He's a proudly
no,
out hero.
Not that there's Din anything rainbow. Wrong with that.
No, he's proud,
I'm
damn
just,
it.
That strikes me as the reason why it's not over here. Or at least a... What the hell was that?
That was a controller falling.
Oh, okay. It's fine. Everything's
fine. Way to
fine.
Go, Tom.
Yeah, I saw it out of the corner of my eye dropping.
But I can see how Nintendo would be a little afraid to bring over...
I
Although they
awesome.
Did bring
they should
they did
think
have,
they brought over
Muscle March.
Yeah, Muscle March.
That
well,
was...
Nintendo didn't, but
okay,
it
somebody
did come
did.
Out, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah, they ought to bring out Captain Rainbow. I feel like we
if
are.
They can have Super Smash Brothers. They can have Captain Rainbow.
Totally. I think as gamers, we're a lot more tolerant of a bunch than Nintendo gives us credit for.
We love mashups over here.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're in San Francisco. So we love our homosexuals as well. Us anyway. Final Fantasy Type O. Zero? O?
Type Zero.
Did
type
I
zero.
Fuck that up? I may have fucked it up.
It's okay.
Again, another game that I'm just like,
Where's our Japanese experts?
I'm trying to think if I played this demo at TGS one of the years. I might have written a preview about this one. It got really great reviews. So
what can I say about this game? It was reviewed.
It was reviewed in Japan. People seem to
gave
like
it. 30-something.
Yes. I haven't been paying attention to a lot of the spin-offs.
Does anybody have anything intelligent to say about this?
I love Final Fantasy.
Sophia loves Final Fantasy. Moving on!
My silence speaks volumes.
One game we can talk about, Elite Beat Agents 2.
Owen Dawn!
Morio, Nakatsu, Rhythm, Damishi, also! Takatake, Owen Dawn 2.
Oh dear.
That was very...
It was,
that sounded
it
legit.
Was
that was like, yeah, that was about an octave just lower than a commercial for the game. Absolutely.
I feel like I have a pretty good Japanese yelling voice.
absolutely.
Yeah, you wander around Akihabara, there's always, like, that dude outside that's yelling, like, right. that constantly.
And that, like, staccato, like, whole...
Yeah, I'm wondering how much they get paid to stand there and just start shouting at people.
I don't know, but it's still less obnoxious than, like, when they turn on the music, the cranking music, when you walk by the pachinko parlors.
Oh, jeez.
Just bing, 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 bling, blah, 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 and you're just like, oh,
I could only stand, like, I stood outside and the sliding doors open, and that noise, I was like, I can't go in there.
No.
The smell and the noise, I'm like, I don't know.
You both have been to Japan, huh?
Yes.
Yes.
I've never been.
Never been.
I'm so happy. I didn't have to go. I don't know. Something about going to Japan for work just strikes me. Because whenever I go anywhere for work, it's always like, okay, now I'm working 16 hours a day.
Yeah, that Hooray. Is part of what comes
it's
with
like, oh, and
Japan. So, TGS.
It's bad enough to go to like LA, but having to like get on a
But it's also LA. But no, like Japan's food is so good. I will go there for work, even if it's just for a day.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah. I was like, you know, given the choice between like subsisting on onigiri for 5 days and eating bacon wrapped hot dogs.
Yeah,
onigiri wins.
Those both sound delicious.
Bacon wrapped hot dogs are great, except on day three like when you need a defibrillator.
Yeah, but Japan, the McDonald's tastes better. Like even if you just want something quick. You can.
I politely disagree.
There.
I think it tasted exactly the same to me, but I also realize that me talking about why I think it tastes the same has nothing to do with Elite Beat Agents.
Right. Elite Beat Agents, a rhythm game for the DS.
Yes. The first one was good.
I mean, the fact that was like a masterpiece of localization, because I remember when O and Don came out in 2005 and everybody was importing it, they're like, it's a cheerleading rhythm game. And I was like,
Sweet. Wow,
if that's not some only in Japan stuff, I have no idea what else could be. And lo and behold, they're like, no, we'll turn them into super secret agents. And they'll dance to Walkie Talkie Man, that song that annoys the unholy hell out of everybody. And they did a fantastic job with it.
And it's fun gameplay.
It was very fun.
Tappa.
Again,
tap that screen.
I guess it's another one of those, you know, Nintendo being risk averse.
Yeah.
But come on, man, we're getting to a point. I feel like with the 3DS, they've got to start doing some digital games, stuff like this.
No, seriously.
Go for
only in Japan.
Valkyria Chronicles 3 is our number two most requested.
I actually forgot that there was a third because. So the first one came out on the PS3. It was really good. I enjoyed it. I got stuck on this one mission and then never went on. But then the second one came out on the PSP, which then kind of just fragments that audience because, you know, I can see the appeal because it's like an SRPG.
Yep.
And the battles take forever, so I can see why you'd want to kind of just pause and take it on the go. But I felt like once you move it to the PSP, it's like you're losing people. I mean, I kind of lost interest when it became portable. And now that I don't use a PSP at all, even less reason for me to go back. So it's like if they were to bring it over, has to be like on Vita downloadable.
Yeah, if they do it, it'd have to be a digital game.
Yeah,
I mean,
just
at this
digital.
Point, with the lifespan of the PSP being what it is now, because, you know, our subway systems aren't like Tokyo's.
Yeah.
Where you're just going to get on the subway. Oh, wait, there's like three people on this train playing the same game as me.
Well, I bring my 3DS around. I'm like, hey, I'm street passing one person as I get into work, and my commute's really long.
I've said this. I've had this argument with Cooper before because Cooper's like, I don't understand the existence of Monster Hunter. And my answer is, have you ever been on a subway in Tokyo before?
Yeah, there's nothing else to do.
It's Japanese. It's WoW for Japanese people.
Yeah.
That's fundamentally what it is. You get into a four-person raid on your way to work in the morning, and, you know, you get off, and you've got a bunch of XP.
It's like the way with like just a lot of commuter countries. It's like we're talking about, I know this is wandering off topic, but just like magazines and how they have been doing better in like the UK.
Yep.
I mean, it's still on the decline, but it's not as bad as here, whereas like how many people actually commute here by train? Whereas like if you're in a country where people just pick up something on the newsstand or, you know, pick up a portable game, they can play on the train. It's really easy. It's just, I feel like here.
Here they got to listen to podcasts.
Yeah,
that's true.
I know, right?
Listen to the podcast. Tell your friends. Yeah, so it's part of just the culture and how people. And the thing is, people's apartments in Japan are really tiny.
So nobody's home.
I don't see people hosting any kind of big group shindigs. Like, I host, you know, gaming parties, and it's like I can fit people into my place. Whereas, like, if you could only fit, like, three.
That's why Rock Band never really took off there.
Or Kinect.
Yeah.
I know, it barely fits in my living room. Yeah. So, yeah.
Anyway, to wrap out this list, a game that.
That Cooper, so Cooper's not in Japan, but
Mother 3. I
clearly he took control of this list.
Again, this is not my my bag. I'm not an authoritative figure on the Japanese games, but I hear Mother or Earthbound, I guess.
Yes, Earthbound 2
has merit.
Yes, yes. Cooper tells me it is the most, like, the saddest game he's ever played. He'll cry so much. I'm like, this does not make me want
to
play it.
I'm like, all right, what is this Mother 3? And I went onto YouTube just now and was like, okay, let me see how it ends.
What?
I'm like, I do this all the time.
No, no spoilers.
I do that with every game. I'm like,
I may actually play this.
Anything about this game, let me just go spoil it for myself.
That's an interesting approach.
Everybody dies.
What?
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
That's not actually what happened.
Okay.
I don't think.
Or did they find out that the whole time they've been dead?
Oh.
Oh, twist.
But yeah, it's apparently something that was just new and different when it came out. A JRPG that wasn't about murdering
people.
Creatures.
Tearjerker. Heard it was a tearjerker.
Slime balls.
Well, but, even the name Mother is kind of sad, because I read that it was kind of based off John Lennon's song, Mother. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's already touching. I have no idea what it really means.
Yeah. With the song or the game.
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty much.
Can we be done with this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Tom hates Japan.
I am not a fan of many games that come out from Japan.
Why not?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like... So Henry had a feature that went up today that was basically along the lines of how do we fix Japanese games. And I was just looking at it, and it was actually kind of surprising to me. Because if you look back on, like, the 80s and 90s, like, Japan was where it was at. Final Fantasy, you had Street Fighter, you had all these big franchises, Metal Gear.
That still exist today.
Whether or not they're still, like, in their prime is a question. But you had no real Western... games. Like, I was sitting there with you and just kind of thinking about, like, what were some big, lasting franchises from Western developers that came out in the 80s and 90s?
A lot of it was on PC.
Yeah, it was, like, Doom.
Doom is the one, the Doom and Quake. I mean, if you can kind of call those, like, they're certainly not as prevalent as... say, you're a Street Fighter or Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But
it wasn't until the late 90s that you started to see a lot of development coming out of the Americas, right, and out of Europe, where, you know, you had Tomb Raider, which is like the great British export and that kind of thing.
When was the original Tomb Raider? I feel like that was
1996.
Mid-90s, okay. Yeah.
So Tomb Raider would be one.
I was sad. That's when the adventure game started to... late 90s. Yeah. I loved adventure gaming.
But now we've got, like, Call of Duty, we've got Halo,
More Call of Duty.
We've got...
all the shooters.
Yeah, the shooters kind of took over. Yeah.
Are we kind of... the way we're talking Call of Duty, it's almost like I feel like you could just splice in and be like, and then we've got Dynasty Warriors, and then we got more Dynasty Warriors Gundam. And then we got...
that is fair.
Samurai Warriors.
Pretty much. Yeah. And yet people still play them.
Yeah, no, it's true.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for what they do with the Call of Duty games. I don't know. I mean, with Japan, I think part of it is that... over the years, I think that this dovetails into what we were talking about with localization. It's mm-hmm. the idea that, you know, 20 years ago, it was a lot easier to localize games.
Yeah.
It was a lot easier because you didn't have to worry about lore. You didn't have to worry about people writing fan fiction about your story.
You got to worry about that when you're making a game.
Fan fiction.
Nobody was talking about crazy fanfic back in the early 90s. Maybe they were, but you guys didn't know about it.
Aren't plumbers talking about plumbing?
Exactly.
You can't have a game like that these days.
So, I mean... it was a lot easier to produce games. It was probably a lot cheaper to localize them and just kind of export them and be like, whatever. And so he's like, aren't you guys worried this is a little too quirky in Japanese? And they're like, I don't know. Just go make some shit up.
Well, no, I feel like it's probably a quality standard. People were more of just like, yeah, we'll release it and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We're not going to market it or promote it, but we'll put it on a shelf.
I do think, though, the biggest sea change happened with this console generation.
Yeah.
This is when the shift happened, because on the PlayStation 2, you got all kinds of Japanese weirdness that they were willing to localize. And now, whether it's, you know, digital media or it's just the cost of producing games now, there's just all these factors that have all just kind of, like, perfect stormed Japan. I don't know.
That's what I don't get with Sony, though. It's like, you know, we're playing Galgun during the marathon, and it's like this quirky Japanese game where you shoot pheromones or ecstasy at girls, and it's like, you don't need to localize this.
Molly,
however you interpret that word, it's not good.
It's just like, a game like this, they don't even have to localize. It's like, why can't you just push it to the PSN store?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Like, I don't... That's not a game that I'm reading for the storyline.
And it seems kind of weird what they just decide to do. Like, they did, like, Tokyo Jungle. They decided they were going to localize. Like, Trash Panic, which was good until it became so impossible that I was just like...
Trash Panic was pretty hilarious.
It was funny until you, like, hit that brick wall, and then the brick wall started taking bricks out of itself and throwing them at your head.
Oh, what was that game where that dude, you run around in a cape, and then all these people follow you in the city? It's from, like, Japan Studio.
It was The Last Guy.
Yep. Right. It cracked me up, mainly because of the music.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, quirky stuff, and some of the stuff we saw from Gamescom looks like it'll be pretty cool, but I don't know. I mean, it seems like digital would be a great space for Japan to innovate with lower budgets, but it just doesn't seem like it's happening. I mean, what was the last thing? Nobi Nobi Boy was an example. Everybody either loves or despises that
game. It was
weird.
So that's, I mean, and this kind of transitions us into Wii U talk. We've got people like Platinum and Grasshopper, excuse me, who are making kind of games that have that Japanese quirk to them and putting them on, or at least they're doing something new and different in with that Japanese flavor, I guess.
Yes.
And one of the big announcements, along with the Wii U being priced and dated, for everyone who has not gotten the memo, the Wii U will be out in North America on, drumroll please, November 18th. US price, $350 for the deluxe edition and $300 for the basic edition.
The black one and the white one.
The black one and the white one. The black one gets you like a stand and a game and what else?
Pretty much, I think most people.
Everything you want.
In a Wii U, which is
a different size. God, yeah.
I was like, who's going to buy the $300 one then?
All the people during the holidays that can't find anything else.
They can't find the black one, so we're going to get that one.
So you have to get your little SD card and
Is it anything different than what happened with the Xbox 360 when it launched? What happened with the PS3 when it launched? Not the PS3, sorry, that price. Woo! but you had those multiple models where you're just like, okay, we're going to put all these out, and all the people who really want the system are going to get the deluxe one, and then all the suckers who forgot to pre-order are going to get stuck with this one, and then we're going to gouge them for more money for accessories.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just...
I find one of the things that's most disorienting to me about these packages is that the internal storage is 8 gigabytes or 32 gigabytes.
Right.
And like, I know why that's the case, because you can, you know, get SD cards and just increase it as big as you want.
Is it SD cards or external hard drives?
Or external hard drives,
I believe.
I think it
does take SD cards, but I do believe external hard drives are what they were saying.
So yeah, like, so you can blow out your own...
But external hard drives cost a lot right now still.
They're like... I was doing some research about $70 for a 500 gig hard drive. But it's just, it's interesting because we've kind of been trained in this way to look at the hard drives for game consoles and be like 250 gigabytes or...
Yeah. It's like 8.
Yeah.
My Vita card is like 8.
What is it, a phone?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I was like, wow, so I'm going to be spending $350 because I am getting one because, professional obligation.
Right.
I will be getting one, and it costs more than my iPhone when it was subsidized and has only twice the storage.
Yeah, and it's just, it's one of those things where I almost think that they shouldn't have advertised the size of the... of the hard drive or the internal memory at all, just because it strikes me as confusing.
Yeah, but you know everybody's going to ask. Then everybody's going to go, why are you guys, hey Nintendo, why are you guys trying to hide the size of your storage?
But
what's
really
going on?
Yeah, well, then you have a perfect opportunity to explain it in full because people have asked, and then they're going to be they're an engaged audience at that point. You can explain to them what the deal is.
I guess the messaging was kind of confusing.
Actually, can I just go ahead and say that I thought the messaging was awful in the sense that only Nintendo would have their press conference the day after Apple has their press conference.
Like,
I mean, God bless them. I do love Nintendo, but nobody checked a calendar.
iPhone 5.
As soon as Apple said we're having a press conference, nobody said, you know, on second thought, maybe we should just go ahead and reschedule because the amount of publicity we are going to lose because everybody will be talking about Apple
is immeasurable
compared to the cost of probably canceling a reservation at that venue.
No, that's a good point. I'm sure all of the conversation online was about the iPhone 5. And
I mean, over the weekend.
I mean, we're talking about the Wii U, but.
Yeah, but I mean, it's
that's what we do.
Well, it's like one of my best friends who is not really a hardcore gamer. gamer, but he has a Wii, he has a 360, he dabbles in games, he mostly plays stuff on his iPad. He didn't know it was coming out until I told him.
Oh, really?
You know, we were out to brunch on Saturday, and I started explaining everything about the Wii U, and he kind of said, that's cool, but, you know, I barely play the Wii now, and why would they ever have a press conference to publicize this the day after they announced the iPhone 5?
Yeah.
Probably could have been planned better.
I mean, it's like having an N-Gage Midnight Madness sale or something. It's like nobody will come.
I mean, planning events is hard, but Apple didn't keep it a secret as to when they were doing their press conference. So you should have had some time to at least finagle the dates and trying to switch venues.
Yeah, if anything, jump the gun and do yours earlier.
Yeah.
Instead of doing it the day after, or wait a week and spread it out.
It's like regardless of what Apple does, whether it's, you know, underwhelming, which seems to be the case with the iPhone 5, mm-hmm. people are still just talking about the iPhone 5.
Yeah.
It's certainly a bigger... I wonder if it's... I mean, we're talking about, obviously, in the U.S. I would imagine it's a phenomenon that's global. Probably not in Japan. I don't know. Does Japan like their iPhones?
Yes, they do now.
They do now. But I remember, like, when I went to Japan, like, a few years back, when the first iPhone came out, you still see people using flip phones, and iPhone hasn't been adopted. But I'm guessing that changed in the last, like, year or two.
Yeah, I have a few friends of mine who live in Japan, and they've said it's... Something happened, and now...
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere, which is funny, because last time I was in Japan for TGS was 3 years ago, and I had my iPhone. Everybody's like, oh, cool,
that's nice. But
iPhone.
Their flip phones are so advanced.
Yeah,
you can do, like, two-way calling, and
you can watch TV on the subway.
Yeah.
You can basically use it the
and
same way.
Light.
Yeah, it's like...
And the battery lasts forever.
And they did, like, the Google Wallet functionality, the NFC, before... Like, we ever had that stuff in the West. So you could basically, like, put your phone over the little subway swipe thing, and it would pay your subway fee.
Japan sounds like a land of milk and honey.
It is.
It is.
With delicious ramen.
And then at the same time, there's something that's, like, super, like, everything is futuristic except that clock on the wall from 1960. It's very weird. There was no Wi-Fi when I was there 3 years ago.
What?
Apparently, there's a lot more now. But when I went before... I mean, like, finding Wi-Fi in Tokyo was like rubbing two sticks together in the middle of a freezing winter and praying to God you would get warm from it.
But the segue that I don't think I got to was Bayonetta 2 was announced as an exclusive for the Wii U. That's kind of exciting. People like Bayonetta.
I loved Bayonetta.
Yeah. Might be a reason to pick up the Wii U.
That
maybe.
Said, I mean, it depends
if
when
it's close to the
Wii.
Yeah,
it depends if it's close to... Well, actually, no. It needs to be spaced away from launch. Because you have to think that as much as, and somebody's going to go, you idiot, I totally disagree. That's fine. You can disagree. But basically, DMC's dropping in January. Hmm. That's going to have everybody's mind share.
Yeah.
Because even the, like, I can't, there are very few people that are still angry at Capcom about that game that I know of. Anybody else who I know has heard about it, talked about it, just,
I mean, DMC fans especially, because they had that big controversy with DMC 3. That went multi-platform? Which one went?
Oh, DMC 4.
4.
Yeah.
There was, like, that huge online internet petition.
Yep, I remember.
A lot of outroar, and then they were like, okay, fine. We're still doing it.
Yeah.
It's funny, because I remember I went to the games. It was, like, Leipzig that year, and I played it. And then 2 hours later, after I posted, like, it became this massive threat on NeoGAF, where they're like, it plays differently, see? La, 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 la. And it doesn't matter. The game was still, it was the most environmentally friendly game I've ever played. Why? Because they recycled everything back and forth. What they're doing now with DMC looks phenomenal, plays great, even if it's not being made by a Japanese developer. Doesn't matter. It looks stylish. It plays well. Dante's, like, they did a good job towing the line. I remember asking the creative director. Ninja Theory's making this. I was like, how do you toe the line between making Dante a badass and a complete douchebag? And they're like, that's actually a really good question. We really had to tweak the dialogue.
Too douchebaggy.
It's too douchey. Too douchey. But with that in mind, I hope they're not saying, oh, we're just going to drop Bayonetta in January. No, please don't. I imagine, though, if they're just announcing it.
It's probably
next year.
Far off, yeah.
Next year. I'm excited, though.
But speaking of launch games, they have a pretty strong launch lineup. Assassin's Creed 3, mm-hmm. Arkham City Armored Edition, Black Ops 2, Darksiders 2, Epic Mickey 2. What else? NFL 13, Madden, Mass Effect 3, New Super Mario Bros. U, Nintendo Land.
Nintendo Land Legends is fun, nice. More fun than it deserves.
The problem is there's not really anything that sells me on buying a new system. You know, like, when the Wii came out, I'm like, I gotta get Twilight Princess because it was coming out. the same time on GameCube and Wii.
On the 360 and PS3, you can get Assassin's Creed 3.
Right.
Yeah, you can get all.
You can play Black Ops 2 on a server where it won't be completely empty.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing, too.
Yeah, that was the first thing.
By its very nature, it's...
Yeah.
So who's going to adopt immediately?
There's no installed base.
I remember I rolled out of bed. I saw everybody tweeting at it, and there's this one section of Twitter I was reading where the guy was going off, and he was just like, this is bullshit, man. They're not selling me on this thing. So what if there's a second TV or whatever? Doesn't matter, because I'll be in those servers, and it'll be easier to get a game of Black Ops on the Wii than it will to get a game of Black Ops 2 on the Wii U.
I don't think he understands how matchmaking works.
No, I think he was referring more to empty lobbies and nobody playing.
Oh, on the Wii than the Wii U.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's like, you'll have more people playing Black Ops on the Wii than you would Black Ops 2.
That would make me sad.
Yeah, some of those, the third-party stuff is kind of a hard sell, in my opinion. I mean, I get it. It's launch stuff. Mm-hmm. So granted, it will look as good. It'll look at least as decent, if not maybe even better in some regards than what we're getting.
God, what a disaster if it doesn't.
Oh.
Can you imagine?
Launch blues. Well, could it be any worse? We made it through the PS3 launch, and man, remember those comparison videos?
But the problem there was... Inherently, because it was going from SD to HD, you kind of knew that at least it looked HD.
Yeah.
With this, we've had the HD consoles, and if the games are looking like significantly or noticeably worse on the Wii U, people are going to flip.
It's going to be no go.
I should hope not, though. I mean, I saw Assassin's Creed 3 at E3 on the Wii U, and it
looked good.
It looked just as good as it looked on the 360. I honestly, if I didn't see some guy walking around with a gamepad, or I didn't see a bunch of like control prompts on the HUD, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been able to tell the difference.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine because it's basically catching up. But what I always wondered with shooters, especially since it's so reliant on Twitch and people, always talking about like PC versus console, but it's like people like the feel of a certain controller in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I think partially like not only because we didn't have a lot of shooters on the Wii, but it's just. Does the Wii controller even feel good to play a shooter on?
Actually, I wrote an article about that last week. He tested out the Black Ops 2 on the Wii gamepad and the Pro controller, and he said because the analog sticks are on the top of the controller, he was having a hard time, like transitioning from switching to like another weapon or whatever. He'd press the wrong button and end up doing something else because it was an awkward
transition. And it makes a huge difference. Because when the Xbox first came out, the controllers were way too big for me.
Yep.
And then once they redesigned it, I was like, okay, this fits better. But the thing is, I don't mind the PS3 controller or the PS2. It's like, it fit my hands. So I can see why some people like Xbox better because it does fit their...
My hands are probably... Yeah, so I can...
Comparing hands.
Everybody has big hands.
But the Xbox controller felt perfect to me.
Right.
Yeah. It's the right weight and the right heft.
I love the S.
Oh, yeah, I love the S. But, it goes for a lot of those games where reflexes are heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to probably want that classic controller. I enjoyed when I played FIFA on the Wii U. Certain things controlled well. But on the same token, it's like there's kind of that... disconnect. You're used to your thumbs being so close together, cradling something. Yeah, you're used to like centimeters apart, not inches apart.
Yeah.
And it makes a big difference, I think. I don't know if it's something that mentally we will get over that barrier, but it does feel weird after years of playing the same stuff on controllers.
I mean, it's just for me because I kind of suck at shooters. It's like I try to find something that I'm comfortable with and just physically. It's like I feel like this is just more comfortable in my hands.
Is it weird that the game I'm the most excited about is Wii Fit U?
Yes.
What about Pikmin?
Yes. The answer is yes.
I'm excited for the new Super Mario Brothers because I saw it at E3. It's so shiny. I didn't think it could look better, but it's just, wow. If they could do a Galaxy game... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
I'm sure they will do.
It's a little weird seeing Mario in HD. And
I know.
And,
I was just like, he
Omar
looked great
from
before.
Pikmin.
Yeah.
I would love to see a realistic Zelda game.
Yeah, the tech demo looked really cool.
Yeah, it did. It looked fantastic when I saw
it. It's going to be a beautiful game whenever that comes out.
It's funny, though, because as is what always happens, I feel like Nintendo makes an announcement. I tell myself, be positive about it. And then it comes out, and I'm just like, while everybody else is having a meltdown. Like, I can't even get emotional enough to have a meltdown. I just kind of shrug and just say...
I was like, pre-ordering.
Yeah, I was like, all right, I know I'm going to pre-order it because I should, because that's what I need to do to stay current. But I don't know. I keep saying, I hope they prove me wrong. That's pretty much my attitude with everything Nintendo does now is I start out kind of hesitant possibly to cynical and then just go, please prove me wrong. Please.
Wait, you don't like Wii Music?
How do we feel about the $60 for a game? That was pretty much expected, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't, yeah.
I kind of expected for the third-party games that are already $60.
Already out,
like,
to be like 40.
The Black Ops and Assassin's Creed and stuff. But
that would be interesting if Black Ops 2 was $40 on the Wii U.
Before new Super Mario Bros., whatever we're on now, I don't really see paying $60 for that.
I mean, it's kind of interesting the way and I don't know if I'm alone in this, looking at it, it's like Nintendo needs to really provide, because the hardware is not so significantly different than what's already out there, like my feeling is that they need to provide a really good incentive
for people to get it. Yeah, there's no Blu-ray player.
There's no inherent, wow, I need that.
It's a remote control.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's the gamepad.
Well, even when the Wii came out, it was like, oh, motion control, nobody has that. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
This is worth buying a new console over. But for the Wii U, it's like, oh, we already have
It's like they had to lead with, like, the bundles or discounts or
like,
something.
What is this new controller that we already have, like, our iPads and we have all these things with apps and
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
It's the idea that it's not just about motion control nobody had, but we have tablets now. We have these little devices that are just as effective as doing what the gamepad already is doing.
Right. So TV.
Nintendo TV
is kind of the turning the Wii remote gamepad into a universal remote.
That actually looks interesting.
It
looks like I might use that.
So
I would if it's universal remote because I can't find my remote a lot of the time.
I mean, I'm kind of comparing it to like Xbox Live. I use the Bing search functionality all the time. Well, not all the time. I use it frequently. It's
Bing.
Really handy. You just
interesting.
Go,
Xbox Bing Batman.
Vampire Diaries.
I've never even used that. Sometimes I'm just like Xbox.
Yeah, I've used it twice and then I just kind of stop.
It's really responsive. I mean, you don't have to like accommodate. You don't have to go, Xbox Bing. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. You just got Xbox Bing, whatever. So it works really well, and it searches the entire... Granted, it's a closed platform, so it searches everything that Microsoft has a partnership with. So with the Wii U, it sounds like it's not a closed garden. So you can pretty much just search, which leads me... Like, I'm curious how they're going to prioritize search results, especially as it pertains to, like, online videos or...
Way Xbox does it, it's... They sort it out between YouTube, Netflix, Hulu, and all those services, right?
So yeah, I would imagine.
Maybe
it's
some
all
way they do it similarly.
Yeah, or especially like if you're going through, like I know they'll have like Amazon integration. Mm-hmm. So it's like also like an element of like, okay, how in depth, I guess, are they going to make this? Is it just going to be the first result, or how useful is it? That's my question. I think that's what the entire service is hinging upon, how useful it actually becomes.
Yeah, I guess we'll see.
November 18th.
It looks interesting, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it looked cool. So, but you know what's amazing about the pricing? It's like people complain about the $300, $350, and then the games, of course. But then people are willing to shell out $500 to $800 for an iPad and complain about a $4 iPhone game or iPad game.
It's true.
It's just
also,
so bizarre.
The other thing that I noticed was people saying, man, I don't want a Wii U. I want a PlayStation 4. And I was like, you shut up. You shut up right now. I'm not buying... can you imagine that? Three new potential consoles in a 15-month span?
Can we expense that?
You know what?
I know.
Yeah, seriously.
Unfortunately, no. I'm like, can I expense mine?
Yeah, I figured the answer would be no. So every time somebody's like, man, I want new systems, I'm like, that is my default response. You shut up.
Yeah. I was like, I don't need any more things to buy. I mean, you can write it off.
Yeah.
If you spend enough.
Tax. Yeah. Standard deduction says no.
Really?
That's the problem.
Dang it.
No GameCube games. Finally?
That's not surprising.
I don't think I ever popped in my GameCube games in my Wii.
Yeah.
I did.
I think once.
I did all the time. I think I would be disappointed if you couldn't play Wii games, but that wouldn't make any sense.
That would, right.
Yeah, I imagine at this point with the advancements, with the advancements in digital distribution, Nintendo will finally catch up to around 2009.
Here's
and
hoping
start selling
for
their GameCube back catalog as downloadable content in Virtual Console. Yeah.
Maybe.
Here's hoping for 3D. I mean, HD versions of like Wind Waker and Twilight Princess.
Oh,
that'd be awesome.
That'd be cool.
There's some rife money making territory there.
Look at all the money. Look how much they can milk gamers and
think
not
about
taking
it.
Advantage.
I'll buy them again. I will do it.
Oh no. Ocarina of Time.
Oh yeah.
3D.
Again.
HD.
First, think of the
3D,
amount of strains of cheese you could make from all the milk that they've gotten from Ocarina of Time over.
Well,
the
I mean
years.
That's kind of their.
Yeah.
Nintendo is the ultimate milker. I mean, what with different
and
colored
and I'm totally
consoles.
Okay with that.
Yeah. They've
got
been milking
Ocarina before. And this delicious Jarlsberg now.
The Wii U's Miiverse. Have you guys seen that? That looks pretty funny. It's basically the Mii Plaza from the Wii.
Yeah.
And you could draw like pictures and whatever.
You mean?
Yeah, like whatever.
Penises.
You know.
Genitalia.
Yeah.
We are so mature.
It's just it's just going to turn into a disaster day one.
If you give anybody the freedom
penis.
To paint or draw, the first thing.
Yeah,
is
I mean,
a
it
penis.
Seems like they're going to have to put on so many restrictions of that it's just going to cripple the service.
I mean, like Black Ops did their customizing like emblems, and that just turned real crazy. And there's, you know, you're just using objects, and
everybody was
and people just
creative.
Got really creative, and it
Dicks
was
and swastikas.
It was absolutely
wow,
that's ridiculous.
Really creative work you've done there.
Yeah,
sir.
It was.
Like,
I mean, and they're all for, there for everybody to see. You can see all of it.
You know, but it's not like this is like unique to us. Apparently, they were doing excavation of a bunch of ancient Roman ruins. I read this a few years ago.
Oh yeah,
and they found cave drawings of dicks.
Nice.
So it's not just like it's confined to 13-year-olds of today,
it's
or 26-year-old man babies of today.
Transcends generations.
Oh boys.
It's in our DNA. What do you want? Anything else we want to say about Wii U?
No.
I mean, in general, are you excited for this system? Do you want this thing to come out at the end of the year?
I'm really at a...
I feel more obligated to buy it than anything. I literally feel obligated.
I mean, I'm excited to play Pikmin a little bit more. A couple of those, I forget what it was called, but you're a superhero and you gather superheroes and it's like
Magnificent
an isometric...
Magnificent 101?
The
101?
No. P100.
Yeah, it's called Magnificent 101 now.
Yeah, that game looks pretty fun.
Yeah.
And Zombie U.
So yeah,
cool.
Zombie U. A lot of people are excited for that.
It's interesting because I wonder if they didn't push the actual console at all and just put all of their resources into talking about Pikmin and talking about the new Mario Brothers and talking about the games themselves and just kind of making, oh, and by the way, you'll need to buy a new console. Because it's the games, it seems like, that gets people really excited.
Oh, yeah.
It's always the games for me.
I'm not excited to play the Wii U. I'm excited to play Pikmin.
Because I want to see how the Wii U even adds to games that have been out already.
Right.
Isn't that why people may consider picking it up? Or are they just not even bothering with that audience?
And it seems like the problem there is that they can't show the games because the games aren't ready. They're not ready for prime time. They have to show the console itself before they can really start.
Yeah. November 18th's coming up.
And the console just looks like a Wii with a new controller.
So. Right. Tablet.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Although I am looking forward to the little party games like in Nintendo Land because I played it at E3 I think 2 years ago and some of them were kind of neat. I mean, I remember having all these, you know, GameCube parties with like Mario Party and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
I had a really good time when I was playing it at E3. Henry was having a good time with it. Rabbids Land was actually pretty fun. I mean, I'm kind of a sucker. I have a soft spot for the Rabbids, but I could see how, from what I was playing, like that would be really fun. I imagine when the Wii U launch happens, I'm probably going to do what I tend to do when I review fighting games and just kind of have a pizza party. Just invite a bunch of people over and get like a different, like cross demographics of different tastes, different styles, different approaches, so that I can kind of get behind. All right, this is what makes the game tick.
Mm-hmm.
Pro tip for aspiring games reviewers: when you are reviewing a fighting game, have a pizza party.
Pizza.
Don't let them touch the controller. Bring some wet wipes.
Yeah, I was gonna say hand sanitizer and pizza party.
Just be there ready with a pump.
Yeah.
No, Purell.
Right. Well, that actually brings up a good point. Gamepad, you will only be able to use one. So they won't actually be selling it in the U.S.
Yeah, which is weird.
I heard they
weren't. Break it.
I imagine they will eventually, but I know
that's
just Japan's the only place
point.
They announced
what
the price.
What if you break it?
you got to buy another Wii U.
No, that's got to be covered. I imagine that it's got to be covered it's under like a 90-day warranty or one-year warranty.
What if you toss it into
the 91 TV? Days later?
But no, that's the thing. If they know that that warranty is going to run out, they're going to have a launch window where they're going to have to drop extra game pads by the end of that warranty.
I think that's like a manufacturing issue, or they just want to make a controller with a console, and then they don't want to have
they don't want to have a surplus yet. Not when they're just trying to get it off the ground.
So does it make sense to you that the gamepad is half the price of the console?
I wasn't surprised.
You weren't surprised.
Well, the thing is, like, they can jack that up because you can use your old Wii remotes, and those were like $60? It was like $40 for the Wiimote, and then another $20 for the nunchuck.
I bought all
four, and I was just like, wait, my Wii is costing me how much?
Right.
Yeah. I only have two controllers, no Motion Plus, none of the fancy
stuff. I didn't get the Wii Motion Plus, so I'm kind of glad that that did carry over, but I knew that that means the gamepad would probably be pretty expensive.
I was pretty shocked. I would have said $70 max.
That would have been reasonable.
And we don't actually know the price in the U.S. This is based off of the Japanese. They announced it'll be like, I forget, 14,000 or whatever $172 is in yen.
Wow.
Yeah, the yen's pretty strong right now.
Yeah.
So I guess I shouldn't be that jealous of Lucas and Henry because their dollar is getting its ass beat right now.
Yeah.
Hello, global econopocalypse. Yeah, that's the Wii U. November 18th, we'll probably have more information on
$350 for black.
Some of us will be buying one.
Yeah, some of us.
All of us will need to be hurrying up and pre-ordering because apparently a bunch of guys
I pre-ordered day one. So I can pick it up at Best Buy. It's right by my house.
Oh, I should pre-order.
Yeah.
You're running out of places to pre-order.
I need to lock that down now.
Yeah. I'm not actually sure what's left because I know GameStop and Best Buy are out.
Oh, pre-sold out.
Interesting. So I wonder if they just didn't have much supply.
I wonder if it's going to be like the Wii because wasn't it like a year before you could walk into a store and actually find a box?
Depends on where you live. Actually,
it was
more than
that. It was about closer to 2 years.
What? Yeah.
No, yeah, it was a long time.
It was a long time. I remember when I left my first job and I moved down to L.A. for work. I still had a difficult time getting a Wii, and that was spring of 2009.
That's crazy.
I made sure I camped out in front of the Circuit City at lunch, and I was just hanging out all night.
I'm glad I sent my ex to go camp out for it. That was great.
I ended up camping out for the PlayStation 3, so wah, wah.
I don't know if I've ever camped out. I feel like I just inadvertently walked in at the exact right time at a Fry's.
Like, sweet.
And picked up a Wii. I'm like, oh.
I just remember.
They just took these out of the Saran wrap.
Urban. It's like urban camping.
We had to camp for the office, which was even more awkward. It was like we had three people there so we could buy enough PlayStation 3s for everybody to review stuff. And then we couldn't. Everybody was so dead and exhausted that we couldn't send anybody to go sit in line for the Wii launch.
Nice.
And that shot us in the foot for like a year.
So apparently there's some demand out there.
I would say so.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, again, it's one of those things where it's like, well, did you just not make enough? How many did
material limitations?
Yeah.
I heard that it's kind of hard to get the minerals or whatever you need to produce.
To craft a Wii U. There's just Reggie in the back with a big hammer.
They have these Chinese gold farmers out there trying to farm silicon.
That's a great image. You just resented Lorenzo. Can you imagine Reggie with like the outfit with like the big like metal?
Yeah. Just some crafting.
Yeah. Just banging a hammer against a forge.
And looking at everybody lifting up the mask and going, some people walk the walk, talk the talk. We walk the walk.
We walk the walk. I could just see Reggie saying that. That guy's a weird guy.
He seems nice.
He seems nice.
In this super measured way in which he talks. I don't know.
He has to be a good presenter.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's a good presenter. It's just very slow and measured and articulate.
You know what it was, though? It was just 8 years ago, he came out on stage, he sucker punched everybody in the face, and then they showed Zelda, and ever since then, everybody loves him.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a pretty good way to do it. You just walk on stage and just go, I said ass at a Nintendo press conference. Here's Zelda. Oh, God, we love you.
Anyway, that's the Wii U. We'll move on to some sad-ish, weird, unexpected news. BioWare co-founders, Ray Muzyka and Greg Zeschuk.
Retired.
Yeah, the doctors retired. Yeah. That was just like,
I want to retire.
What?
Whoa.
What?
They're not even that old.
No.
40s. Early 40s.
I mean, they're probably billionaires, but...
Yeah.
Well, certainly millionaires.
Yeah.
I would imagine that... I'm just going to go ahead and preempt the next 5 minutes of conversation by saying, I can't wait to see what small studio the Doctor's found to make tiny indie games next.
Well, I like how one's going to craft beers.
Yeah.
Like,
the one I would expect to go make beer, Greg Zeshek, is
Shepherd's
now,
Brew.
It sounds awesome, yeah. Okay.
Forming his own... the Beer Diaries is what it would be. It's basically he'll be making craft beers or just interviewing people who make craft beers.
I heard that and I love him so much more.
I know, that's pretty awesome.
Well, I heard Ray's doing more charity work, which is what I would always love to do if I was going to retire early.
Right.
Just like working with animals, just, you know, local organizations.
I'm sure they're so ready to just check out. Because, I mean, the past couple of years have been really rough for BioWare.
Oh, I bet,
Dragon Age 2 kind of...
Didn't really have the impact. Everybody was upset about Mass Effect 3.
It's just been a roller coaster.
The Old Republic just
all
went
the drama. Bleep,
bloom.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's weird because they had, like, the original Dragon Age was everybody loved.
Mm-hmm. I love that game. That was
it was
so
really
good.
Mass Effect 2, people hated at first, but then were like, okay, this is awesome.
It's amazing.
Mass Effect, I guess, came out right after EA bought them, too.
Yes.
2007. So Mass Effect was very well received. So that was their climb up the hill, and then
Mass Effect 3. Oops.
They were already pretty high on the hill though.
Yeah,
coming off the last generation, Jade Empire,
KOTOR.
Yeah,
those ones were.
Their stock
awesome.
Was definitely up. But then you know you had Dragon Age 2, which a lot of people did not like. The Old Republic, which
is
by
kind
all
of
means
faltering
was a
now.
Good game ish. People liked, but it didn't. Certainly didn't.
It didn't have legs.
The way an MMO needed to.
It didn't do enough in the MMO genre. I think.
And then, you had Mass Effect 3, and people had their complaints with that. So they were probably just like, you know, fuck this noise. I'm
can't
out.
Please everybody.
Yeah.
I would imagine those guys have probably been firing on, like, all four cylinders plus another V8 or something. Like, I can imagine that, you know, it's got to take its toll on
them. But, geez, what a run.
It was a hell of a run. I still think they will come back in a few years and form some little
studio.
They'll
miss it.
Greg has already said that if his whole craft beer venture doesn't pan out, he'll be back. He may be back, which would be...
But not for the money. He'll just be back because they miss it.
Right. I mean, as I understand it, Greg was more of the creative type and Ray was more of the businessman.
Yep.
So... if we're going to have one back, it may as well be the
creative one.
The creative one.
I have fond memories of one of my old jobs during E3. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning on the second to last night of the show. Everybody's completely like delirious out of their minds. And then the doctors come in just to say hi to a couple people, and everybody just perks up. And we were so motivated.
Like,
we were
the
like,
reason we're here.
We're like, the doctors have entered the room.
Hear me.
And then the next day they showed us Dragon Age because it was in the suite next to us, and that's why we found out that the doctors came to visit. And I was just like,
nice.
Oh, we're in the same hotel as the doctors.
Dragon Age.
This is great.
Oh, yeah, my biggest memory is just them coming out at E3 wearing those ridiculous robes.
Oh, the Jedi robes for
the
tour.
Old Republic.
What was that?
Like, wow.
Was that 2011 or 2010? I can't remember.
That was
2010. That was 2010. Oh.
Was
really?
It?
Yeah.
I think it was I can't remember.
Could have been
They're all.
No, that was 2010, I think, because that was when they were doing the big fanfare, and then the last year was the one where they were just like, okay, God, it's finally coming out, guys. Finally coming out. Okay. Swear to God, it's coming out.
Yeah. What, they go back to just being doctors?
The doctor. Oh, jeez.
Are they real medical doctors?
They are actual bona fide medical
That's
doctors.
That's awesome.
I think Ray.
It's like another reason they're fantastic.
On his Twitter feed.
It was like an ER.
They save lives.
I don't know about. I don't know if they graduated med school. I don't know if they ever
go save some lives.
Yeah,
but on Ray Muzyka's Twitter feed, he has this like daily doctor advice or something. It's pretty funny. Take
don't pick your nose.
Yeah,
make sure you take 15-minute breaks after playing games.
Yeah.
Don't poop sock. It's bad for you.
It's kind of an end of an era.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm curious to see where BioWare goes without them. They have Aaron Flynn, who was the general manager of BioWare Edmonton and Montreal, taking over, it sounds like. We'll probably still get... that was the other thing. Dragon Age 3!
Dragon Age 3, that's coming.
Inquisition.
Yeah. I like the timing for this.
Show. Yeah.
Dragon Age 3, everybody! Also, Ray and Greg are out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye.
Which is a little scary, but...
We don't have.
Hopefully, they learn their lessons from Dragon Age 2.
It's kind of like shooting a heat seeking missile in a hot air balloon. Yeah. It's like it's launched. Hey, check out that hot air. Whoa.
No, everything I hear about Dragon Age 3, they didn't announce many details yesterday. Excuse me. They didn't announce many. Sorry, I just burped in the microphone. Delightful. They didn't announce many details about Dragon Age 3. Last year, I was at a conference. I feel like it was Comic-Con. And they were talking about how they learned their lesson with Dragon Age 2. It would not just be like a tiny little city in this giant world.
Right.
It would actually go back to being a giant world. It would feel like you're moving about in more than just like a 1 mile by 1 mile square, right, or whatever it was. That's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird because in one sense, I don't want Dragon Age to become Skyrim or have that giant feel to it.
I'm not sure if it'll go that way. I think they'll probably take it more towards Origins where,
right,
you know,
that's the hope.
It's just a map and you see the line of blood drawn to the next area and then it loads up and you're in a forest now.
And it looks different and it's unique.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Did you guys read the description of that? There's that story where there's like a leaked survey where they kind of talked about, you know, the Inquisition and they're just going over different titles and how you'd be commanding. You can either be very political or you can command your own army, like I guess different ways of going about your business. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess that's going to be weaved into it somehow. I mean, that's all I really
like, more intrigue into the whole, more maybe than just blood and guts.
Maybe
that would be interesting.
Yeah. So
like a real diplomacy system or something like that. I would play that. It'll be on the Frostbite 2 engine, which is what powers Battlefield 3.
Which is a great engine.
That's a good engine. Yeah. I mean, obviously, engine's only as good as the people who make it. But BioWare's got some people. and I think there was rumors a while ago that it would have multiplayer, which could be interesting. I don't want to quite fully transition to it, but we've been playing a little bit of War of the Roses, and we interviewed a guy called
Gordon.
Gordon Van Dyke.
Gordon Van Dyke,
who
sorry,
used to work with EA.
With EA on Battlefield 3, or in other Battlefields as well. But that game is like a third person
slasher,
medieval
beat 'em up
sword.
It's basically
statting,
a first person shooter with swords instead of guns
and horses. And
I can see that kind of maybe being something that they could do with Dragon Age 3, where
I mean, for Mass Effect 3, when they announced that it was going to have multiplayer, I'm like, oh god, really?
Yeah.
And
turns out people are still playing it.
Have they officially announced that it'll have multiplayer?
No, I don't think so. But if it does, I don't know. I'm not going to count it out.
No, I think it would be really fun. I mean, it kind of reminds me, and this game kind of weirdly mentioned a couple weeks ago, Dark Messiah of Might and Magic, where you had that just fantasy themed battle arena style multiplayer combat. That would be really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that's, again, to reference War of the Roses, it's such a more visceral combat experience when you're up in somebody's grill hacking into the broadsword.
and trying to react fast enough. You're like, no, no.
Yeah.
It's really nothing you could get out of shooting somebody
Call
of Duty.
No, there's totally no back and forth. This is actual sparring.
This is you definitely cutting someone until they bleed to death.
And then you stab him in the face.
And then there's an execution.
Execution. Yeah.
Sounds like lots of family fun.
It's great.
Yeah, no, and that's totally right up the Dragon Age. Dragon Age out, because that whole game originally, at least, was supposed to be all like blood and gore and guts. And
the first time I saw somebody play that game, I was like, oh god, it's like Carrie on prom night.
What always makes me sad is like when we talk about multiplayer in these like Western RPGs, it's like I miss the old PC days where you could just play with someone on a PC and obviously not the same one, but you can just do the main quest together and you would be not by yourself. Because, like, I love RPGs. I just don't want to spend 80 hours playing by myself.
No, yeah, that's true.
And it's like I do like the side multiplayer, like, skirmishes and things like that. But it's like I just like being able to go on this adventure with somebody else. Not a la Fable, necessarily.
Perhaps a la Borderlands 2?
Oh.
What a segue.
You like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to have to give Cooper some tips.
Seriously.
Borderlands 2, out this week, Tuesday and today. We have a review up. We gave it a
4 out of 5.
4 out of 5.
Great.
It is a great game.
Great.
Do we...
Four-player co-op. I like that. I like cooperative games, like Secret of Mana.
Like Secret of Mana.
Yeah.
There you go, except with way more guns.
True.
So, 4 out of 5. I have been playing this game also.
Yes.
It's really good.
It is. It has a way of getting its claws into you, especially when you're, like, in the... I'd say when you start out and you're getting into, like, the teens, that's the part where you're getting the really good missions.
Oh, really?
It's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, overall, I had a really good time with it. I sank 45 hours into it, which is probably the most I've sank into any review ever. Mm-hmm. Usually I kind of cap out at 20-something with certain games, but... it's just, it's fantastic. It's just kind of like, I feel like there's a point maybe around the 20s to the mid 20s where you're just kind of like, it feels a little grindy.
Yeah.
A little too grindy and...
Hours, not level.
Actually both.
Oh, okay.
It's a shooter like, RPG. That
yeah,
takes time.
Yeah. It is very much, in that sense, it is a lot more RPG than shooter. But I still had fun with it despite some of those misgivings. There is a chunk of it, though, that I did also solo, and that also kind of puts a hampering on your leveling because you can only level so fast. The beauty of it is that it's really heavily co-op centric, so you're going to want to play with people. You're going to want to form your group. And I can see where there's elements where there's things I didn't like. There were quirks that seem like they're also – you could – flip those and make the argument that, oh, well, some of the co-op stuff that's a little bit weird, like, for example, the fact that somebody's hosting a game, not all of your progress in their campaign is going to carry over into your campaign when you start
that
playing
sucks.
Solo. That part is what really, really got to me. But then at one point I was doing a mission with someone that said, hey, you've already done this mission. Do you want the option to skip it? And I was like, why the hell didn't you do this for me 10 hours ago? It's just kind of like it doesn't really explain why it did that. There's no logic to it. So it's just like it's very confusing. But on the other hand, I can see how they designed that so that, okay, you're going to host a game and you're going to play as a siren in this game and your friend's going to play as the gunzerker and this other guy's going to play as a commando. And then basically everybody round robins through every campaign so that everybody gets to play through it as all the classes.
Oh, interesting.
I could see the logic behind that, but man, that's a hell of a slog to get through.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that, I mean, Borderlands is kind of built on its personality.
Yeah.
I would say the first one had Scooter was probably one of the best characters to come out of that game.
Yeah.
I still remember his horribly profane redneck responses to everything. This game also has a really big, bold personality, especially in the main villain, Handsome
yes.
Jack.
Handsome Jack, and you haven't even gotten to the point where Handsome Jack is like just this like reprehensible. Like you're like, oh, he's kind of a douche.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Like I just want to like beat him up. You know, this is gonna be fun. And then you're just like, there will be points in that game where you just be like, oh God, you are absolutely. I knew you were horrible.
Yeah.
But holy shit, you are an absolutely awful person.
Yeah. No, I have a very limited exposure to him thus far. I'm like level 10, 9 or 10. And
yep.
Thus far, he's just wantonly killed somebody on
just
audio.
That.
He likes to make jokes. You listen to audio logs and he's like, hey, so, how's it going? The guy's like, oh, this. Hey, what's wrong with your face? Well, I was scarred because a bunch of skags attacked me. That's cool. Do you have any kids? Yeah, they do. Well, they're about to be orphans. Boom. That's the audio logs. You're just like,
I'm surprised you remembered all of that.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the. Actually, I went back and picked up a bunch of early game audio logs very late in the game.
Oh,
so it's fresh in my mind right now.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah, he's this awful character, and I think that's the biggest testament to Borderlands' storytelling. I don't think that it necessarily gripped me the way that Mass Effect does, per se.
No.
But the storytelling is a lot better than a lot of people give it credit for. Claptrap is hilarious.
Claptrap is
continuously hilarious throughout the game. The characters, you know, and some of the side quests, I feel like the side quests were a little uneven. Some of them dragged out. Some of them felt like they were very superfluous. And then others really colored in the quirks of the characters that you encountered from the first game. So that was really great.
Yeah.
But
one other thing I want to say about Handsome Jack. The man wears someone else's face.
Yeah. It's great. Grafted on.
Yeah.
But it's just throughout everything in that game, no matter what happens, no matter what extra stuff you kind of are like, oh, this kind of feels like filler, that character is so strong that you will go through whatever the game throws at you so that you can kill him. In that sense, it's like Bill. He's fundamentally, Bill. He's like, no, by the time this is done, I'm going to be standing over your corpse. I can't wait to hear stories about how people finish that game because I want to share my story, but it's too early. But man, I'm very happy
in
with
that
the way
it just came out.
Very, give people 50 hours.
I'm very happy with the way that I finished the game in that regard.
I see. Yeah, some of the quirks that I have found that I haven't really been down with is. Mm-hmm. This is a very much a loot-based game, and I have a hell of a time picking up loot. If you kill an enemy, you will largely auto-pick up, like, the money or the ammo.
Yep.
If you open a chest, you have to manually pick it up, and the way...
It's like you have to hold a button.
You have to hold the X button.
You have to, like, back away a little bit.
And you have to get it perfectly lined up, or very
it's like a mini game in itself.
Lined up to your reticule. Yeah. And there's a lot of chests to open. You're constantly trying to see, like, if I need this, if I don't need this. It's just really, it's
tedious.
Frustrating.
It's kind of, from what a lot of people have told me, that if you have a PC that can run it, play it on PC.
I would totally see that. Because, especially with an Xbox controller, you're just not getting the amount of precision. Yeah.
Well, also, what a lot of people were saying, one of my colleagues had mentioned that he played it with an Xbox controller on PC, and he said everything about the game was significantly better.
Really?
It looks better, it flows better, it controls better, is what he was saying.
I guess I'll be visiting Steam.
Yeah. And the other thing about the controls is I will find that my character will just kind of start walking to the left when I'm trying to focus in on an item to pick it up. I'll just be like...
You're like, no.
My feet will just keep going. Yeah, I'm like, wait, I fell off. Fuck everything.
I had some driftiness early on. Then it kind of, like, corrected itself later. There's this one section. I had to collect a log. It was underneath a bridge. I had to get up the staircase of the bridge after fighting these horrible, horrible monsters that I absolutely despise. And God forbid if I ever have to play that game alone again and fight them by myself. I would freak out. I need people. But it's like you had to step out onto this beam, and then you had to step out to another beam in order to run across the beam to get into this shack where all the walkway had been blown off. Mm-hmm. And boy, oh boy, precise platforming this game does not have.
Yeah. No, it's a little floaty, which I don't mind. I feel like the floatiness works. It's kind of like how it works in Halo. But yeah, controls. Jesus Christ.
But then it's also, in a way, I feel like the guns are a lot more tactile the higher you go into the game. So it feels...
Which makes sense.
What I really admired is the fact that they took these, they sold the first game on, you've got these hundreds of weapons and all this customization. And it's just like all this, just everything everywhere. And they've organized it into brands, mm-hmm. which is really cool. So you know when you pick up a specific brand of gun, you're going to get a certain type of style.
Right.
So you know that...
fast firing, corrosive.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, what's the brand? Marukai, I think. I'm probably getting the name wrong. But that's the one where I just knew. I was like, I'm going to get awesome stuff that will have effects.
Yeah.
And the effects really play in wonderfully into the game as well. So you know certain enemies. When you get a swarm of robots coming at you, you better switch to corrosive rounds because mm-hmm. the acid will break their metal up. If you have a bunch of psychotic raiders coming at you, you better switch to fire rounds because it'll kill them faster.
And it's really easy to switch between weapons. It's all on the D-pad.
Yeah.
Four loaded up eventually. I think you start with two.
Yeah, and then eventually as you keep leveling up, you can add more and add more and add more. I mean, overall, for the things we gripe about it, maybe like the controls aren't necessarily great.
I feel like that's a pretty big issue. For a 50-hour game, if it controls a little
wonky... Yeah, if you're fighting with the controls, it's not that fun.
It reached a point where I didn't fight with them anymore, though.
You kind of adapt and get used to it.
Yeah, that's what it was. I felt like I eventually adapted, and I was like, okay, then these are the things. I guess it's how I am.
Yeah.
I can. There are certain things that I find unforgivable with controls. In this case, I found them adaptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it got under my craw a little bit less. But overall, the way that they divide up the weapons types that they have, the way that they have the status effects implemented, I mean, I think they did a fantastic job with it. You know, maybe it's not necessarily my game of the year per se, mm-hmm. but guaranteed, like, once the onslaught of review season is over, if there's a bunch of people co-oping, like, in
you
the new
look
year,
back and see
fun.
If this mm-hmm. is one of the ones that I like this year.
I'll probably jump on and get myself up to level 50 because I know they're going to have, eventually, they will have some sort of, they'll have the DLC, and then the DLC will be what ends up really fleshing out the rest of the game. Because that's what happened with the first game. The first game was like, they had all this build up, they had a crappy ending, everybody complained about the ending, then they dropped a ton of DLC. Maybe Mad Moxie wasn't that good, but the rest of it just really fleshed out the universe and made it a much better game.
And I like how this one starts, and it's just like they kind of tongue-in-cheek give a nod to like, oh, we kind of boned the ending of that one.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, well, no, we didn't bone it. It did this.
Yeah, the intro.
That was good.
Yeah, they did a great job.
I mean, Gearbox just has such a good sense of humor about all of this stuff.
They do. I really like, I kind of wish they had a little plush claptrap because I'd put it in my cubicle.
As you should.
They will.
Totally recommend the game. It is out now. We gave it 4 out of 5.
Old scale.
What?
Wrong scale. Wrong scale.
Wrong scale, Tom.
It's good. Otherwise, we're running out of time. I was going to talk about Little Big Planet Vita. Sophia?
I had a good segue about floaty controls.
Oh, I didn't gotta get in there.
Well, I didn't want to cut Sterling off. You know, you guys are talking about it. It's really important. Anyway, Little Big Planet Vita. Actually, 60 seconds. Okay, it's actually really worth playing on your Vita because there aren't that many games right now. But Little Big Planet, I mean, I love the series. The problem, I used to get just frustrated with the controls. It's really floaty, but it's like the atmosphere and everything else makes up for it. But the Vita version, the controls are better than the PS3.
Really?
Yes. They're tighter. I am not fighting with the different planes. And I think part of it has to do with just level design. They didn't design it in such a way where it's like you need to constantly be moving back and forth. And it's a little stiffer. So it's like you don't just, whoops, I made it to the second plane. And so, yeah, that's better. And then the fact that it's
on
the go.
It drives me crazy that the Vita doesn't have a bigger installed base. It
I
just
know.
Sounds like
and
there's
it's just
so
like,
many
think
good
of
games
like creativity and all this stuff. It's like there's 7 million levels that were created on the PS3. And just think of what people can do on the Vita. Yeah. And it's like with touch controls, it's super easy to just kind of paint things in and move things around. So, you know, hoping, you know, with all Little Big Planets, I'm sure a lot of people are just going to jump into the community and just start creating stuff. So I suck at that. I like other people's levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like there's so many good games coming out on the Vita, and I feel like it's just wasted.
It is. I gave it 4.5 out of 5. Yeah. Definitely worth playing on the Vita, and if you like the series, for sure.
Very good.
Just got to give it time. It's less than a year.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I know. I'm very impatient. Fable the Journey. Lorenzo,
Fable
you saw
the Journey.
Fable the Journey. It is out later this year. Do you remember the day? October?
October something. October 6th. No, 9th. Sorry, 9th. Yeah.
One of those days.
Whatever the Tuesday
yeah.
is.
Latest from Lionhead, sans Pierre Molyneux? Is he still there?
He's
no,
gone.
He's gone.
No, okay, he started the... Yeah. What was that again?
That was during the Dark Ages for me.
He started talking about Fable the Journey and then
he just
But it sounds like...
But yeah, I put a good 3 hours into it. From the beginning, as a preview. And... You know, at first, when they announced Fable the Journey as a Kinect game,
all
I kind of just...
You heard Kinect, and you're like, okay, goodbye.
I mean, it's one thing with some Kinect. This is all Kinect.
Yeah, it's all Kinect, but it seems like they're, you know, real conscious about, you know, the what you can do with Kinect. So it's very much on rails for the combat sections. They said they tried doing the whole, like, shoulder-turning Kinect functionality and... I can tell you that doesn't work in the Kinect games.
Rise of Nightmares used that, the Sega game.
Mm-hmm.
Turning shoulder, moving, no.
So that's cut out completely, and you're basically on rails and you're shooting magic.
Fireballs.
Yeah. I had a lightning ball in my right hand and a push spell in my left, and it was actually kind of cool because...
Weren't you on a wagon, too?
Oh, yeah, the whole game...
The whole game you're on
place,
a wagon?
Takes place, like, around a wagon. So, like, you'll be riding a horse, whipping the reins, and you have to do this, like, full, you know...
Air traffic control
hands
thing.
Up in the air and crack the whip, and it actually works pretty well. You could steer it with your right and left hands, and you don't even really need to use any other part of your body.
Okay.
And you go around picking up little experience orbs, and you have to slow your horse down and speed him up depending on the terrain, and... you know, there's chase sequences and stuff. So that's all pretty cool, and it works really well.
Mm-hmm. It's a horse wagon game.
Yeah, so...
This is a horse wagon simulator.
So, yeah, you're staring at a horse's butt the whole time.
Nice.
But you
love that butt.
Yeah, but you run into, like, you know, the series characters like Teresa, the seer. Mm-hmm. She started off in the first one. She's kind of like... She guides you through, and they're saying that she really plays a larger part in the journey, and you see more of her story because she's been kind of this mysterious character, and you don't really know if she's a good guy or a bad guy.
And your story carries over from Fable 3, right? Or does it?
I didn't really get too many details on
that. Oh, they're a little shy about that.
Yeah, but apparently I think that's, like, depending on how you finish Fable 3, it'll affect certain story segments.
We didn't just blow an embargo, did we? That's fine?
No.
Okay.
No, that's announced.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That. You had a look on your face. It was like, Sophia, shut the hell up.
No, okay. I think that's fine. But, like, as far as, like, the magic goes, I really liked it. Sometimes it was a little wonky, and you have to get used to Kinect, which is kind of like the rest of Kinect games. You have to figure out how your body will react to
this
game.
Or how the lighting works, so, like, which movements are okay in that room.
But, you know, with the magic spells, you get two in each hand. It's kind of like Skyrim, where you could, you know, use a push spell and grab a hob and toss him up into the air and shoot him with a bunch of lightning bolts. Or they have this whole mechanic with the offensive spells where you could shoot it off to the side and then drag your arm towards an enemy to guide it to that enemy. So it's kind of like a homing
getting visions
action.
Of the Star Wars
You kind of feel like a sorcerer Jedi kind of person throughout the whole thing. It's actually pretty fun. And it's really centered on the story. It's really cinematic. Mm-hmm. Like, there's always people talking. Teresa's always talking to you while you're riding the horse. So there's always something going on.
A lot of emotional depth to it. Like, in that preview you wrote, there was, like, this... apparently the horse can get injured.
The horse gets injured.
You put her down.
When you're driving the horse, it's really simple controls, and you could easily run into rocks and stuff on purpose and just be a douchebag like that. But once you do, you stop by on the side of the road at a rest stop or something, and you see the poor horse, like, has an arrow in its butt.
He's like, go pull it out and, like, heal it.
Or there's scars, and you have to heal it. And if you pull the arrow out or the thorn out the wrong way, then the horse squeals, and it's real sad.
Horrible.
And, you know, you could either clean your horse or not, and if it looks dirty, I feel like this is like a car wash. I just felt bad for the horse.
In general, I really felt bad about myself.
So whenever
good or bad, I felt like an awful human being.
Yeah, so whenever I stop by the side of the road, I'm like, I gotta heal you, and I gotta clean you off.
So, did they announce they're gonna have a demo for it, you know?
I have no idea.
Because it makes me wonder, then. It's kind of like, you're talking about healing the horse. I can only imagine the YouTube videos from all these, like, sadistic kids that are just like, I'm gonna turn the arrow the wrong way.
There's so many sociopaths in the world.
There really are.
I mean, it's really one of those games that you should play before you dismember being
right. Because the idea, I think, people are just like, "Oh, Kinect," but it sounds fun.
Yeah, it's fun, and it's supposed to be pretty lengthy, like as long as the other Fable games. So it's kind of like an interactive movie.
Full retail release.
Yeah.
Okay. Out next month, October 9th.
October 9th.
That does it for the main segment of the show. We are going to jump to an interview with Gordon Van Dyke, as we alluded to earlier, the senior producer on War of the Roses. If you haven't heard of War of the Roses, you are missing out, because this game is awesome.
It is amazing.
It is really... I mean, okay, so I'm going to caveat this by saying War of the Roses is made by 13 dudes, okay? So it's not going to look like Call of Duty or something like that, but... what I will say is they fucking nailed the gameplay.
It's really in depth too. There's that whole armor system.
It's a Paradox Interactive game, so clearly.
Yeah.
It's super hard in that Eastern European way.
Right.
But I feel like this is the most accessible one, at least.
No, that's true. It is very accessible. It's, as we mentioned earlier, it's kind of like, think about an FPS, third person shooter. Take out the
M16
and put a sword.
A halberd,
or a giant axe, and a horse. You can ride a horse.
Yes, there are horses.
Bow and arrows.
You can
be a sniper.
Run somebody down. There's bow and arrow, crossbow.
The crossbow that takes 30 seconds to reload.
Oh my gosh, the loading thing. It's fun.
We'll go through it more in the interview.
Keep an eye out for it.
An eye out for it. We'll review it.
We had beta keys for it.
And I have a beta key that I will be giving away through Twitter. Or actually, no, that's a full retail.
It's a retail key.
So we'll get to that in a second. But anyway, without further ado, Gordon Van Dyke. Hey, everyone. We are here with Gordon Van Dyke, senior producer on War of the Roses. Gordon, how you doing?
Really good. It's great. Fun to be back in San Francisco. I'm actually a native of San Francisco.
Oh, really? So, where are you at right now?
I live in Stockholm, Sweden now.
Oh, right. working on War of the Roses. So this is a very... it's not a game we see often. It's like a third-person melee combat. You have experience in the Battlefield franchise, and it's kind of like Battlefield with swords. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, you could say that we took a lot of inspiration from multiplayer games. We wanted to really bring that that competitive nature of multiplayer games, but take it into a genre that's very overlooked, and we haven't seen a lot of games in that fashion. You know, so far. I think it's something that's going to happen. I think it was more of a technology restriction as well, because you really have to be focused on the hit detection, and you know, and you have to really be able to have a network code that supports a high amount of accuracy, so that the two guys that they're fighting have to see the exact same thing, and it has to be very, very precise.
Yeah, like the distinctive thing about this game, I guess, is it looks in many ways like a normal shooter, but it's like a close melee combat game, and from playing it myself, what I notice is it's far more viscerally satisfying in this way, because you're just like you're right up in somebody's face and then hacking them with a sword.
It is much more personal,
yeah,
for sure. It's like, you know, probably wouldn't want to do this, but we should almost think about adding some type of smell system.
Right,
you could smell your enemy. But back then, I don't know if we would want to smell those guys. I don't think they took baths that often.
Right, totally.
But yeah, it is like we really focused on that. I mean, it is a key aspect to that. That's why we've really focused on the customization of different armor, giving them a huge variety to make a different coat of arms as well, so that people really identify each other visually more than just by a name tag. We don't want the generic, you know, assault soldier that looks the same for pretty much everyone,
right,
for the most part. We really wanted to kind of add on to that visceral experience that you get naturally from this close quarter combat, and take it to the next step. And I feel like we've really kind of started on something really big. I think we're at the tip of the iceberg for this type of for our game, for our franchise. But I think in general, you see really cool games that are coming out that are doing something similar. Like you have Chivalry, Medieval Warfare, which I think is really going to, you know, is going to add to that genre, and hopefully that game's successful as well.
Right.
And you know, eventually, I'm sure there'll be another Mountain Blade, and hopefully that game takes it to the next level, and our three franchises, you know, lead that, and it expands beyond that.
Yeah, like, you kind of touched on this earlier, we don't really see games like that very often, and why do you think that is? Like, is it something that big publishers are just kind of afraid of, or
I think
it's
so.
Not proven, or
yeah, I think
so they're just waiting for, because this is a Paradox Interactive game, right?
Yes.
So yeah, they're just waiting for.
It's I think it's a daunting task for, I think, a lot of guys in the industry. It's a scary thing to take on. It takes a lot of attention to detail. Designing around that is very, very difficult. So we have a really senior designer who's been around. He has his name in credits on Dreamcast. Is Morten Stormdahl.
Okay.
And so he's been around a while. So it takes somebody who's really experienced. I think technology needed to catch up to it, because even just 5 years ago, I don't think we could have done something with this level of hit detection. We needed a really robust physics system to be able to do you know, that type of combat to the level of detail that we have done it. We also run our servers run at frames per second as well, but that's for calculating what's going on in that world. So we, like a shooter, can run and get away with it at 15 frames per second, and ours has to run at 60 frames per second, so that when two guys are swinging their swords and doing an attack simultaneously, both of their swords can hit each other and collide, and then and you know, both it neutralizes that attack for both guys. You can't do that if you're running at lower than 60 frames per second, because then you have to have your client actually predicting what's happening in between those moments. And then if two guys are getting a different, if both guys' clients are predicting something separately, then unfortunately it starts to become weird and it doesn't make sense. And then both guys are going to be annoyed.
Yeah, totally. Earlier you mentioned that about 11 people are on the team making this game. Is that?
Yeah, well, there's 13 of us.
13?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, that's obviously a tiny, tiny team.
Yes.
How do you guys establish a scope when you've only got, you know, 13 guys?
Well, you know, even if you have 100 guys, you always tend to overscope. Okay. When I was on Battlefield versus this, we always overscope. So, you know, we did have to cut certain things that we really wanted to get in, unfortunately. But that's about game development. I've never seen that not happen. But another thing is that our team is extremely experienced. So there's a lot of veterans. I've been in the industry for almost 7 years now doing this. And before that, I was in the mod scene for about 3-4 years. So I have a lot of experience, and I've been obsessed with game development since I was a kid, and I tried to even get into in college, but I'm a bit older, and college has looked at you more crazy than if you were saying I wanted to be a rock star. When I was like, I want to make video games, they couldn't get over the fact that I want to make what was in the video game machine. They just thought about arcades, and they're like, thought I wanted to fix the arcade machine.
Nice. So, and kind of one of the other things about having a small team is, like, you can't have, like, that level of polish that you're going to get on a Battlefield game or, you know, a Call of Duty or something like that. So how do you guys kind of overcome the, like, we want this game to look like one of the best games on the market, but we just simply don't have the resources? Like, what are the things that you do, I guess?
We had to cherry pick what was the most important, right? And one of the things that was key is, you can have a you can have a really polished game, and if you didn't focus on the core mechanics of your game, then it's not fun. So even if your game looks really pretty, it could be not fun, and then nobody's going to care anyways. When it polish really helps when you're trying to sell your game to someone. When so what we did was we hoped people would kind of understand and overlook some of our blemishes, because we do have some. I'm not going to like pretend that our game is the most perfect game. I kind of used this analogy to equate us for the space when the race to space between the Russians, the Soviet Russians, and the U.S. The U.S. spent, like, I think it was $1 million, at least that, or it might have been more, on a pen that could write in zero gravity. And the Russians used a pencil. So, you know, so it was like, what, less than a dollar. Right. So, I mean, so we had to take that kind of similar idea and approach. But we focused on, we had a really great engine that helped us really kind of project things visually. And so but we probably have not the best looking UI, but it functions.
Right.
Back to the Russian analogy.
Right.
As long as it functions and it can get you from point A to point B, we're really happy with that.
Nice. And I guess it's always something that you can, like, if this game takes off, you know, like, you can make a sequel and then probably
We can make a sequel. We plan on updating this game as well and adding new content to it. And we're doing it in a very unique way. We're not going to do the cliche or this industry standard that's come about, where it's a DLC pack and a guy pays $10 or $4 and then they have a couple extra swords available to them. We want to make sure that everything's always available to everyone, and we want to reward the people that play our game a lot.
Yeah.
And so we're also going to give away maps for free and new game modes and everything. And then we could probably even update our menu. I mean, that's not going to affect the core of the game.
Right.
So, you know, we'll look at that if it's worthwhile. If people are happy with it and it functions right, then maybe we'll ignore it. But yeah, exactly. The next game, I think that's when people, when you start a new franchise, and that's something difficult is that we've taken on as well. We're introducing a brand new IP.
Right.
And people are very, you know, skeptical of those now. I mean, people want to make sure that their money's spent on what they actually want, and they don't want to throw it away. So we've taken on that challenge and focused only on the core gameplay, because if that really is well, then you can kind of move forward. Look at Assassin's Creed 1. And it was like, there was a lot of bad design choices around that core mechanics, but they really proved that the really awesome kind of free-running style of movement through through that city and the open sandbox environment with that, and then the crowd AI. And then they fixed everything in 2, and I thought 2 was a fantastic game, far superior to 1. So we've kind of taken that approach, and you know, and of course, if 2 goes, then now in War of the Roses 2, those things that people might forgive when you have a brand new game, but it was really fun, and so you really nailed that core experience, so they're really happy with that. But then those, like, kind of those little smaller things that they might have forgiven you for in the first game, that if you don't do it, fix it in the second game, then you're going to kind of receive a bit more heat.
Yeah. Do you think audiences these days are less forgiving or more forgiving?
I think it's both in some senses. Like, I think if a game's super, super fun, they're going to always really be forgiving because they're enjoying themselves. So it's easy to forgive. But I think they've also become more savvy as well. So if you try and kind of fake things or do a little smoke and mirrors, I think that's when they really won't become forgiving. If you're honest and upfront with them and say, here's our game. This is what we've wanted to make. We hope you enjoy it. And mm-hmm. you're very honest with them. I think then you're going to be in a better position.
Yeah, totally. So one thing, having just played this game for probably an hour, there's a learning curve to it because it's not just a pull a trigger, shoot a gun kind of thing. It's like if you're swiping left with your mouse, your sword is doing one thing, you're swiping right. So once you master those things, you know, it provides like a fairly deep, satisfying experience. But just like that opening kind of like, whoa, kind of moment, yeah. like how do I actually kill somebody with this, you know, bladed weapon? How do you guys kind of balance the wanting the deep, satisfying gameplay of like a lot of options with just allowing the player, I guess, to work up to that, making it fun still in those first opening moments when they just have no idea what to do?
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. And I don't know if we solved it the best way possible. Mm-hmm. We really tried hard to do that. But like you said, the learning curve it's kind of there. And mm-hmm. if you want really good, deep, close quarter combat experience, then it makes that challenge even more daunting.
Right.
So what we did was we actually created four predefined kits, mm-hmm. and we perked those out with great options and a really great weapon with upgrades to the weapon. Mm-hmm. We have a really awesome customization system. So then we had four custom slots that a player is going to be able to really make that specialized character with those custom slots, but mm-hmm. they won't have access to the same perks or that particular weapon with the same upgrades until they've actually unlocked them themselves. Mm-hmm. But they always have access to that first character. And the first one, we really thought about that. What's going to be the first thing? What can we do to help them have a kit that's going to give them a higher chance of being successful? So sword, it has a long blade.
Right.
Like our weapons, like if you don't hit with the blade, you don't hit.
Right.
And if you hit, like if you have a poleaxe weapon, it has a long staff, then if you hit with that, the wood, you're not going to do any damage to your opponent.
Yeah.
So you actually have to hit with the blade. So we give them a sword. We give them the big round shield because it's easier to block an attack. Mm-hmm. It's bigger. And everything, all those things matter in our world. We don't fake the detection or the deflection mm-hmm. in that case. So if you put your shield on your back, you're actually helping protect your back.
Nice.
So it does like, you know, even if you move those weapons around on your body and we keep those there, mm-hmm. It does something. If you hit somebody's sword with an arrow and it's on their side, it's going to deflect that.
It.
Yeah. Nice. So it's really crazy in that sense. So I think, you know, back to the thing about accessibility is mm-hmm. I think that's also important. If things are happening as a person would understand it in the real world, mm-hmm. then it helps them kind of assess what's happening to them in this virtual world.
Right.
So the more we play off of things that would make sense and be logical, then the easier we help make that accessibility and kind of bridge that gap.
Right.
And then just making sure that first kit that they had has a decent amount of health, he has decent protection, he has a decent chance of being successful when he swings his first attack mm-hmm. and at least hits somebody.
Yeah, because I mean, it is fairly intuitive. Like you swipe the mouse and it's almost like an extension of your sword in that sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we're going to wrap up. The game is War of the Roses. It will be available next month?
It's October 2nd is the official release date, uh-huh. but if people pre-purchase now, if they believe in the game and right. they want to jump in, we're doing early access for them. So that's before, you have to pre-order before September 25th, and then that's when early access will start.
Great. And you can get it on Steam, anywhere else?
Steam, and then we have external partners like Amazon mm-hmm. and Gamersgate and a bunch of other different digital distribution channels. Gamefly, I believe, is one of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. So, all right, Gordon, thank you very much for being on the show.
Cool. Thank you.
Good luck on the game.
Awesome. Thank you.
And we're back. That game is exciting.
Yeah.
As you can tell through my voice in that show, or probably not, I feel like I was subdued during that one. Anyway, War of the Roses, we're looking forward to it. Let's move on to community. Last week, we failed to give away anything.
Nice job, guys.
Well, I mean, the problem was, is like we tried to, like, we need more Twitter followers for the Radio Radar Twitter feed.
Tell your friends.
The normal Twitter feed. Tell your friends. Tell your friend. I feel like such a whore when I say all that stuff. I'm like, just like, so we're done. We're not going to be giving, we're not going to be like withholding on you to get more Twitter followers. That was just a bad idea in general. So I will be, through regular course of events, just tweeting out random codes that we get. So follow us for that. Just whenever. You don't know what's going to end up in your... You don't know.
No.
Nope.
So keep an eye on it. Certainly, there will be the Riders of Rohan beta keys that we were giving out last week. We also have a giveaway on the site for that. But also, I have... What do I have? Joe Danger 2 codes. What was that? Star Trek something or other?
Yeah, online items.
Yeah, online items for Star Trek.
Online.
Star Trek Online.
Star Trek Online. That'll be there. What else? Do I have anything else? War of the Roses. And just stuff. We get keys all the time. We can't keep them because we can't take free stuff.
Yeah. Keep an eye on the site. We're putting up beta codes all the time.
That's true. Like,
at least once a week. One time a week.
I know. I have Lorenzo
doing
another
one of these stories.
Lots of giveaways.
Another giveaway. Story.
So, follow us and stuff, etc., etc. This week's question and we do actually have a nice prize this week. We have what do we got? Headphones from Sony. They are the Pulse Wireless Stereo Headset Elite Edition. This headset includes built-in preset modes, a hidden noise-canceling microphone, and soft ear pads that provide you hours of comfortable gameplay. With the included 3.5mm audio cable, you can use the headset with a PS Vita or many other mobile devices. It's really nice. It's,
yeah, it actually is really nice.
$20 value! $20 value! probably. But no, so if you want to win those, they're for the PS3, PS Vita, and I guess other mobile
and
devices.
And many other mobile devices.
Are they Bluetooth or is it just wireless?
No, I think they're... I would imagine they're Bluetooth.
I think
Bluetooth,
it's a wired cable.
That would be crazy if they weren't. I don't know.
I don't know.
I have a fact sheet here.
They sound
awesome.
You look at
this and let me know.
I'm going to read over this. Let's see here.
So, to enter to win these, or not enter to win, to be eligible to...
Dude, Base
for the
Impact
giveaway,
Technology.
I don't even know what that means.
I like the name. Base Impact trademark. Combined with 7.1 virtual surround sound.
They're
provides
loving the nuts trademark.
With trademarks and
parallel
trademarks
immersion and a competitive advantage while gaming.
The question.
What Western game would have been better as a JRPG? What Western game would have been better as a JRPG? First one that comes to mind. Call of Duty.
Ah.
Modern Warfare 2. Better as a JRPG. I just want to see Soap McTavish with a dot, dot, dot. so yes, give us a good reason why your favorite Western game would be better as a JRPG. Do you guys have anything off the top of your... I didn't give you guys any advance notice for this.
No, you didn't get it.
I would like to see Mass Effect as a turn-based JRPG.
Okay.
In sprite form. It'd be cute.
I can see the emotion. I mean, if Mother can get that emotion.
Hey, I cried in Final Fantasy IV.
Which is a thing.
Tom's judging me.
I am judging you. It's fine. While you guys think, I will go
I've
over.
I've just thought of one.
Oh, go for it. You lost it.
I want Madden.
Madden as a JRPG.
You know
there's,
why?
There's
you know
a
why,
football.
You know why I want Madden as a JRPG? Because it's the closest we'll ever get to another Tecmo Bowl.
Oh, that's true.
Boom.
I'm pretty sure that they do have a football, or maybe it's a baseball JRPG.
Are you talking about, what is it? Power, is it Power Pros?
Power Pros.
Yeah. Power Pros was awesome.
It works. Any sport works, really.
Yeah,
it does. Huh. I know they have, like, some crazy... I want to say, actually, like, Captain Tsubasa, that old soccer anime, they did a DS JRPG, I believe.
Nice.
Oh, I can see that.
Yep.
But if you would like these lovely, lovely headphones, just answer that question. You can do so in the comments for Games Radar's... the Radio Radar story on Games Radar. You can tweet at us... you can...
At GR Radio Radar,
thank you. We also have an email address, radioradar@gamesradar.com, where you can just send any comments, any old comments you want.
Fan mail.
Yeah, send us fan mail. Like what's going on.
We did get fan mail the other day.
We did.
Nice.
It was nice. It was sweet.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Guy.
It created rosiness in my cheeks as I sat at my desk.
US only winners, sorry. For everyone else, sorry.
It's a legal thing. It has nothing to do with us. It's your country and all its legal
it's
stuff.
Your country.
I mean, Sophia's Canadian. It's not like we hate Canada. We just can't mail you guys prizes.
If you want something for free, follow us on Twitter. You can get some Steam accounts. Or Steam codes.
Steam codes.
Sort of, I think. There you go. Probably. Anyway.
I know my Western Japanese RPG.
Good. Taryn,
do it.
Red Dead Redemption, because it's Western.
You do like a spaghetti Western?
Yeah.
What's the equivalent
of
spaghetti?
Awesome.
Is there a spaghetti Western?
Japanese Western.
Probably the closest you would get would be like, what's the movie? The Blind Sword. Zatoichi. Zatoichi, the Blind Swordsman. That has kind of that Western vibe. I mean, it translates into, like, the samurai stuff.
You know those cowboy samurai guys?
Red Dead Redemption with samurai.
Tominobu. Yeah.
It would basically be Way of the Samurai, except good.
Yeah, except awesome.
Anyway, I think that does it for this week. Sophia Tong, thank you.
Thank you.
No problem. Lorenzo.
Sterling. Namaste.
Thank you.
That does it for me. Oh, sorry, you were still talking.
Cut me off, no big deal. Thanks for hosting.
No problem
having me on.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. We really appreciate it. Tell your friends. Oh God. Please. Goodbye.
You just hoard yourself out.
I did. Goodbye. Alright, everybody. Oh, Jesus Christ. That was almost very painful.
That would have been a great outtake, though. Hey, everybody, Jesus Christ.
Tom just fell off his chair.
That's fine. Metagame! Which demands more of its players? Is the question presented to you.
Sweet.
All. Sophia, you want to go first?
Wait, hold on.
We have to choose which card.
I am choosing the card.
Lay it down.
Yeah, okay.
Lay it down. All right, Sophia.
So the question is, which demands more of its players?
That is the question.
I don't think any other game could demand more from its player than any Kinect game.
Oh!
You are using your entire body and your mind, which is...
And your mind. I don't know about... Well...
You have to think, you have to gauge, you know, your reaction, how far you are from the person next to you, whether or not you're going to punch the actual television. It's demanding a lot. You may even sweat.
You may sweat.
Yeah, so there's physical activity.
So it's not demanding your mind in the sense that it's going to cause you to think. It's more...
It's about controlling your motor functions and all that. So it's pretty demanding. It uses everything.
Upholding the social contract.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so... How long do I have to go for?
You're good.
Okay.
Lorenzo.
I win.
More demanding.
More demanding than Tetris. Oh. Tetris is, you know, demands, you know, your brain to fit these shapes together into one solid piece, and you have to have the dexterity to flip those shapes around.
So basically, motor skills,
brain skills, and... you know, that whatever that function is when you're fitting those shapes into the
clearly
other
your
shapes.
Brain skills are on the top of their game.
They're on point right now.
Yeah,
that's all.
Wow. So Tetris, any Kinect game, while all of them are demanding in certain regards, I don't know that any of them can touch Diner Dash.
Oh, that's a.
Because when you think about it, you think about all the systems of micromanagement that you have to go through in any given session of Diner Dash, all the way from getting your plates, making sure your customers are happy, making sure coffee's not being spilled in somebody's crotch. The level of detail that you have to focus on.
Food service is no joke.
It's true. I'm sure there are plenty of listeners out there that will vouch and put their hand up and say, I've waited tables. It is miserable. All of this is encapsulated, boiled down, and concentrated into one so-called casual game.
Every time you bang the table, it goes through the microphone.
Excellent. That's my emphasis. I'm putting my emphasis...
You're not even really banging the table. You're just going to tap it.
I'm just gently tapping. It's like when politicians don't point with a finger and they point with their thumb. Right. They do the thumb... Yeah. I'm adding a little bit of bass.
You realize that was Bob Dole, right? And Bob Dole...
Clinton.
It was Clinton.
Was it Bill Clinton?
Yeah,
Clinton. Oh, okay. You're right. Bob Dole had the pen. Exactly. And he held the pen because he didn't have function in his arm. Yeah. Anyway, Tekken is mine, which demands more of its players. And it's too bad Lucas wasn't here, because Lucas knows firsthand that you can play a Tekken game and never actually win.
Yeah,
he reviewed entire game.
He never won a match.
The entire game without winning a single match.
But he still liked it, so that says something.
But Tekken demands more of the player than any other game out there ever made, just because it allows for every single player to continually one up one another. So there's never actually a point where it maxes out.
In Lucas's case, is just about perseverance.
Lucas is a moron, so.
I figured it had more to do with him, you know, trying not to laugh himself to death as he went through the roster.
His little giggles.
His little snickers.
Giggle box.
Get past the giggles. Yeah,
oh,
giggles
poor
is
Lucas.
The ultimate.
We pick on you because you're not here.